Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Today we're talking about converting today's headlines into teaching tools. Folks at the Progressive New City Elementary School have used the local controversy over that Confederate monument in Forest Park as one of those teaching moments for fifth graders. And it seems to be an effective technique. Joining me in studio are Stephanie Teachout Allen, a fifth grade teacher at New City School. She came up with the idea for the teaching project. David Cunningham is a sociology professor at Washington University. Thank you both so much for being here. Nice to have you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Stephanie, let me begin with you. Give me some sense of how this whole idea evolved.
Well, I think part of it is our unit is called Choices Make History. So we're regularly looking at what choices have been made throughout history, what choices can we make now. So the unit actually fell in really nicely within that framework in terms of the removal of the Confederate monument and what choices do we have. So we got connected with David, who is a parent at New City School as well, and wrote a book on Clansville, USA. And he did a parent workshop, parent spring diversity meeting, talking about Clansville, USA and restorative justice in the age of polarization. So through that, we really started talking about what does it mean? What does it mean to bring down the Confederate monument and what choices do we have? So the students ended up really learning some key things in terms of how to engage. They learned empathy and how to lead with empathy is a key part of that. Also in terms of how to think critically. So when we talk about we the people, who is the we? And try to unpack some of those kind of things.
Is this maybe not a little too heavy for fifth graders?
You know, a lot of people ask that, and I don't think so. I don't think so at all. They are eager to engage. They are curious. They are capable. And it's we're talking about skills. So when we talk about, I think a lot of adults are uncomfortable engaging in this because we are actively taught not to engage. And so I think it's up to us to teach kids how to engage more productively.
David, was your child one of the fifth graders?
He was not. I have children in fourth grade and first grade last year, so he wasn't part of it directly. But certainly I had been exposed to New City through them and through Stephanie's work. Stephanie is also Director of Diversity and Inclusion for the school. And so there's a lot of things that our children have benefited from that really permeate the school itself and really relate to this kind of lesson.
Obviously, you have no problem at all with this kind of curriculum.
Well, I think it's really important. I think we can kid ourselves and say that we can insulate children from these sorts of issues, but they hear about them in a whole variety of ways. And we often, I think, are reluctant to place trust in our schools. I mean, we have teachers who are trained to engage these sorts of issues, maybe not these issues in particular, but they have all sorts of techniques for relating to children around issues. And I think it's important to provide a collective space where students can constructively deal with these issues in a way that's age appropriate, but also doesn't avoid the difficulties behind them.
Stephanie, New City is a little bit different than many schools, but many schools would shy away from something like this as being too controversial, a little bit too difficult to deal with.
I think we saw that a lot right after the events in Ferguson. We saw that a lot after the election as well. Yeah. And I think we need to. It's our responsibility to actually teach kids how to see multiple perspectives. To teach kids how, when I talk about learning to lead with empathy, how to listen to understand each other, not just listen to respond to each other. And I think that's what a lot of our country is doing right now, is just wanting to respond.
Well, there were two sides to this whole monument discussion, obviously. Were both sides reflected in your class?
They were. So we started out actually by having students interview adults in their lives about different symbols and what symbols mean. And part of it was with the Confederate flag. What does a symbol mean and how has this meaning perhaps changed over time? And what we did was we had a spectrum in the gym of agree and disagree, and we had students silently stand up. And they weren't necessarily reflecting their opinions at the time. They were reflecting others. And there was a real diversity of opinion in terms of what they thought that symbol stood for. Was it a symbol of hate? But it wasn't binary. It wasn't just this or that. And I think that's one of the things that the students really learned is it's along a whole spectrum, and there's lots more to just, it's not just a yes or no. It's not just a leave it up or take it down. There's a lot in the middle, too.
David, again, that sounds very adult to me. It sounds a lot like what you might be doing at Washington University.
It directly mirrored that. I mean, I had been working with two colleagues of mine at other universities on contested Confederate memorials around the country. And through that, I've had the opportunity to work with a wonderful research assistant, a student at WashU named Jeanette Freiberg. And Jeanette and I came out to Forest Park to meet with Stephanie and the fifth graders. And we were both amazed at the level of nuance and sophistication that these students brought to this. I mean, exactly what Stephanie's saying, where this is not an either-or binary kind of situation. So that's both speaks to the issues that lie behind this, but also thinking about solutions moving forward. I mean, certainly when we think about what the students propose should be done, this is prior to the statue being moved, I mean, these solutions were largely around modifying it in ways that would provide a basis for dialogue in St. Louis, provide a basis to represent where we are as a city, where we are moving forward. This was not a discussion, as Stephanie's saying, that's about should it be here or should it not. And the students were really able to meet us there and really exceed certainly my expectations for what 10 and 11-year-olds are capable of.
So this field trip was taken before the removal of the statue?
Yeah, it was taken last May. So it was when Leda Crewson had said, within 100 days, we'll be having some sort of a decision. So it was definitely in the news in terms of New Orleans as well. So these are living, breathing things. And to be a school that's located within a mile, less than a mile walking distance of the monument, I think it's our responsibility to talk about it.
Did they have any sense of what the mayor of New Orleans was saying at the time? Because he had a speech that was considered quite remarkable by many.
Actually, the day before we went down to the monument and did this lesson, kind of engaging with the monument, is when the mayor had given that speech. So we used that text that morning and kind of went through the text of that and what is he saying, what does this mean?
What are some of the things that the youngsters were proposing?
They were super creative. I loved it. As David mentioned, they really did have a lot of we want dialogue. One of the ideas was to encapsulate the monument with Legos. And they wanted to build Legos all around it. They didn't want to remove it. They wanted to keep it there, but build Legos all around it and give people Sharpies and let them write their one word for hopes and dreams of St. Louis.
That does sound like a fifth grader.
It does.
Now.
Another was they wanted to take Kevlar and wrap it kind of like Claude and Christo and Jean-Claude, and use it as a living scroll so that people could write what they thought their narrative of St. Louis should be in the future. And that way, once it was done being written on all over, they could rewrap it and then have a scroll that would be kind of something they could put in the museum later. Most of the students did not necessarily say, we want it taken down. A lot of them wanted it contextualized. A lot of them wanted it modified. But they really wanted to also think about the intentionality of where it was. So it's Forest Park. People might just be going for a run or having a picnic versus going to a museum and really saying, I'm going here to learn and to engage.
New City School being what New City School is, obviously a lot of diversity in that institution.
Mm-hmm.
What was the breakdown like amongst the kids of different races in this project?
Well, it's the fifth grade class, which is pretty much goes with the school. We're about 44% students of color. About 40% of our students do receive financial aid. So it was a very diverse racial background.
But how are they reacting on the basis of race? Was there any difference? Were the African-American youngsters reacting differently than the white kids?
I think it did perhaps become a little bit more personal.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's the empathy piece. And I think that's the piece we're really trying to teach is people are learning from their classmates. They're learning from other people that aren't exactly like them.
I thought you wanted to say something, David. Let me put a question to you. It seems to me that an argument could be made, one side of this overall debate, an argument could be made in favor of retaining these monuments to be used for exactly the kind of purpose that Stephanie and her class used it.
I entirely agree that argument is an important piece of this because we often think of this, if this is something that we don't agree with, we don't feel represents our values, that either moving it or removing it is something that would be a solution to that. But one of the things that can do, too, is not necessarily erase history in the way that opponents say, but erase the basis for a dialogue around what that history means. And so one could easily make an argument if we could contextualize it in a different way, or even take something like a fifth grade proposal around wrapping it in Kevlar where people could write their hopes and dreams for the city. One could imagine those banners being placed as a backdrop for community meetings, let's say, afterwards. And so I think people who especially people who feel like this history is a personal affront might feel like it's important that we engage that collectively. So again, the idea of retaining in modified form or recontextualizing a memorial provides a basis to have that sort of discussion.
Stephanie, can you give me some sense of how youngsters' views might have changed during this whole process, and some who came in adamantly in favor of removing it, or those who were adamant about keeping it?
Yeah, it's a process, and it's a process of learning from each other through listening to each other. Yeah. And in that, we would ask questions. So the actual end result was students presenting their ideas to Mayor Krusen. And she actually came to school and listened to a lot of their ideas, which was a neat opportunity for students to feel like their voices are heard. But it didn't start with that ending point. It really developed in terms of us asking them questions. So some students might have said, yeah, well, maybe we should just move it, but let's move it to Richmond. And then we might have questions like, well, does Richmond want it? Do they have their own things to be thinking about too? So I think it definitely, as opposed to us giving answers, we asked a lot of questions.
How long did this project take? How long were you involved with it?
It was about 2 weeks, but it didn't necessarily start there. These are skills we're teaching all year. This happened in May, but we had dealt with controversial topics up until that point as well. I mean, we started the year talking about Colin Kaepernick. We started the year understanding the disparities in terms of the Del Mar Divide. Mm-hmm. So our students are used to having these conversations and leaning into those.
Yeah. Let me put the same question to you that I did to David with regard to the argument to be made in favor of keeping monuments like this to use for the kind of teaching experience that that you did.
Mm-hmm. I think that would be a good question to pose to the students again this year and say, in terms of choices make history. So this was a choice last year. What are our choices today? Should we recontextualize it more? What do you think we should be doing instead? I mean, there's also an opportunity to say, well, this monument is now no longer in Forest Park. What monuments do you think we should have there? Mm-hmm. And letting them come up with the answers to that.
The kids that you dealt with are obviously have moved on now to another grade. I wonder if you have any sense of their reaction to the notion of paving over Confederate Drive on which this monument was located. Well, that's going on right now.
Yeah, our school starts on Monday, so yeah, we haven't started yet. So I'm very eager to hear what their thoughts are on that. I know over the summer, all of them were texting and sending emails saying, did you know what's happening right now in Forest Park? And still wanting to engage. And that's exciting as a teacher to say, over the summer, kids are actively engaged in these conversations still.
You'll be dealing with the same students then in the new term?
I won't. I will have a new group of fifth graders, but the sixth graders are still there. And David and I were just talking before we came on in terms of how might we kind of bridge both of them coming together and saying, we're in the same space together, yet 1 year ago it looked very different than it looks today, sure. And having a conversation between the fifth and sixth graders.
Yeah. Well, I have to take a break now, but it'll be interesting to see how the kids react to what's going on right now, not only in Forest Park, but in other parts of the country. It's obviously much in the news in recent weeks. We'll come back in just a moment, continue our conversation with Stephanie Teachout Allen, who is a fifth grade teacher at New City School. Also with me in studio is David Cunningham, who is a professor of sociology at Washington University. We're talking about a program that Stephanie carried out at New City, taking fifth graders and really giving them a lesson in history and diversity and inclusion and all the rest of it with regard to that Confederate monument in Forest Park. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation about this project the New City School carried out during the last school term. And Stephanie, I assume that this is going to continue, this concept that you implemented here with the monument.
I definitely think it will. I mean, just because the monument has come down does not mean the problems surrounding it have changed necessarily. So we need to continue these conversations. We need to continue to equip students with the skills for how to engage in this. And I think in a school, you're not just preparing them for success in the classroom, you're also preparing them for success in life. And I think these are crucial skills that students need to know.
How will Charlottesville play into whatever you might be doing?
I definitely think it's the topic that we will start out with first. But before you even get to Charlottesville, you need to create community in your classroom. You need to make sure it's an environment of trust. You need to make sure that students trust you and their peers in terms of how can we engage in this. And you need to set some ground rules. You need to have community norms that teach kids how to have these conversations. Not just necessarily jump right into them.
David, let me come back to you once again. Charlottesville is a very heavy story for a lot of different reasons, not only what happened there, but some of the things that followed what happened there. Are fifth graders, again, equipped to deal with this?
Well, again, I think it's difficult for anybody, fifth graders or not, to avoid the story entirely. And, you know, I think it's important to be able to draw on certain aspects of it to convey lessons about how we can constructively deal with divisive issues. Certainly, Charlottesville really is about engaging with these divisive issues in ways that became quite corrosive and became tragic in certain ways. And I think it's important for students not necessarily to emphasize those pieces, but emphasize the issues that lie behind it and think about alternative ways that they and the people around them can be thinking about these kinds of issues and the kinds of progress that we'd like to make. So I think it really starts with kids at this age that are able to engage these sorts of troubles that we're dealing with as a nation at this point. And I think the more we see that now, the more we'll see informed teenagers and young adults and older adults that are able to have these conversations and be used to having those conversations that can be quite difficult.
I want to invite our listeners to come into this conversation. We have some time left to do that. 382-8255 is the number. That's the 382-TALK. Send us an email if you like at talk@stlpublicradio.org or send us a tweet at STL on air. What do you think? Do you think that this is a good idea to bring fifth graders into discussions such as the one we're talking about here today? We'd love to hear from you. Stephanie, let me come back to you with regard to what you're hearing about the kids carrying these conversations into their homes and having discussions with their parents. I would have to assume you've got a sense of what those discussions might have been like.
I do, and I think it's an interesting thing in terms of we educate students, but we also have a responsibility to educate parents and families, because much like we didn't have technology necessarily in our classrooms growing up. We didn't have Singapore math as a way to teach math. We also weren't engaging in conversations about diversity and social justice and inclusion and equity. So we need to also teach families how to have these conversations too. So one of the things we've done is actually have a parent meeting to say, here is some of the curriculum we're doing. Here is some of the vocabulary that your children might be coming home with. Here are ways to engage your children in these conversations at home. And the conversations are rich. The kids are equally as curious. They're often the ones spearheading the conversations at home. I heard from a number of parents over the summer that said, my child is taking me on a field trip to Forest Park and having a conversation with me. So it was really neat hearing from the parents over the summer as well.
What kind of feedback, David, do you hear from the parents? Your child or children were not involved in this particular project, but I'm sure in contact with other parents about it.
Yeah, it's actually not that different from what I might hear from the families of my WashU students. You know, just like the university students, they really crave having a space where they can constructively deal with these sorts of issues. And once you create that initial space, which might be in an educational setting, it provides this foundation to have a more comfortable conversation in family settings, in settings with peers. And in the absence of that foundation, it becomes very difficult to do that. And so I feel like the kind of skill it imparts on 21-year-old university students is really fundamentally the same skill as that it imparts on 10-year-olds. And I feel like you get a lot of parallel feedback in terms of the way in which you can enable those conversations in different kinds of settings.
Do you think that using news events, current events, events of the day, can be more effective as a teaching tool than a history book, for instance?
I think so. I think students are experiencing these things directly and indirectly, and you can think about theories, you can lay that foundation. I think the most effective thing is that when you're dealing with maybe abstracted ideas, whether it be providing historical facts or frameworks within which you can interpret those sorts of facts, that can often seem abstracted and stilted. And if you can take something that people are going to feel is very close to them and they're experiencing it very viscerally, the ability to relate those two things together is really what becomes the most powerful teaching tool. Mm-hmm. So
watching it on television every night certainly is different.
Well, and I definitely saw an increased level of engagement from students, too, because this is being played out in real time. Mm-hmm. They feel like they are part of the conversation. And at 10, that feels really important. That's really empowering. And I definitely, they're 10. They want to engage in these conversations, but then a minute later, they might want to go outside and run around on the playground, and that's real. But I definitely saw an increased level of engagement and thoughtfulness.
It is so encouraging to hear this about 10-year-olds. I mean, that's very important. We have a couple of callers who want to get into this discussion. Let's bring them in. We'll start with Chris, who is calling from St. Peter's. Chris, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Thanks, Don. Full disclosure, I'm a New City School graduate. I think that's a great place. But I just kind of wanted to get the panelists' take on how the kids react to the notion of, you know, are you trying to change history? Are you teaching or manipulating history? It's one of those things. I know New City does a good job of getting the discussion out there, but is that something a regular fifth grader might not be able to understand or feel manipulated by?
Which of you would like to, David, go ahead.
I actually feel like kids tend to have an intuitive sense that history is something that actually is a fluid thing. It's a set of positions. It's a framework for thinking about particular events and things that might seem factual. I often feel like adults have had a long history themselves of thinking about history in terms of heritage, thinking about it as a fixed kind of entity, and somehow you're desecrating it by modifying it. But I think kids are really used to this idea that we can have different views on the past, and then as they're shaping their own present, they can see how the past bears upon that. And so, you know, I feel like the ability to impart that kind of lesson as it relates to contemporary issues is something that seems more natural to maybe 10-year-olds or certainly to 21-year-olds than it might to people who have been more fixed in terms of their experience of something as part of their own long historical experience.
Stephanie, do you want to, what's your take on that?
I think this ties in with the framework of choices make history. Mm-hmm. And we made a choice to take down this monument in our city. And much like businesses, in terms of they reevaluate and say what worked well, what didn't work well, and they make changes. And I think we took that as an opportunity to say what's working in our city, what's not working in our city. And this is one way in which we are wanting to change this to make it better.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call. Mark will join us from St. Louis. Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to ask, as historians and lovers of history, don't you feel a little bit of a regret that in taking away the Confederate monument in Forest Park, you're actually removing what a historian would call a primary source document of history? Because one of the great things about that monument is that it had a remarkable text, which was a remarkable example of the lost cause theory, in which the monument said the men who fought for the Confederacy carried on the tradition of the sword of Washington and the pen of Jefferson. That whole aspect now is lost, because if you're going to need to teach that there was such a thing as lost cause historiography, what better example than to have one right there for everyone to see? It's a primary source document, actually. And as historians, you've got to feel a little bit of regret for taking that away as a teaching tool. One other quick point, paving over the area and turning it into grass is just a little bit totalitarian. You're not trying just to remove that document of history. You're trying to remove any memory that it ever existed or it was ever there. And I think that's a little strange. That's all. I'll take my call. My answer off the
Mark, thank you, Mark. Well, Stephanie, that's something for you to chat with the kids about when you
get
back.
And I think that is something that we did talk about. And I think it was interesting that the students weren't necessarily saying, we need this to come down as an absolute answer. They wanted to modify it. They wanted to contextualize it. a lot of them were saying, how do we make sure that, I think they were aware that this was one side of the story, and they were really eager to make sure that the complete story was told. One of the things they noticed is on the monument, there is no mention of slavery. That was one of the first things the student said. And so to make sure that their main objective when presenting to Mayor Crewson was, we want the whole story to be told.
Did they fully understand what that monument was?
This was after a year of U.S. history was, so we might have started with how did we get here as a starting question, but then we looked throughout history and we did cover slavery and the Civil War and Reconstruction. So they're aware of what that meant to many people.
Mark, do you want to, or David, do you want to react to what Mark said about erasing history?
Well, I would just say I don't necessarily have any regret that it's that text, as he's phrasing it, is not retained in its prior form, meaning in Forest Park as a monument to this particular cause. But I think he's right that it would be a real loss to not have a space within which we can critically and contextually engage with the kind of text that he's talking about. He's right. It's an exemplar of lost cause mythology, and you can use that as a teaching moment. And so, you know, I know in other places, incorporating that into something, say, like a museum exhibit becomes really important. And one of the things that both Austin, Texas, and Baltimore have done recently is provide a contextualization of that ideology around the lost cause, but also, in speaking to the former question of how do students engage history, incorporating the removal of these objects as part of that history. So when they tell the story of that ideology, it's not just that the object was removed in 2016, 2017, it's that that removal is actually part of the very historical story that people are engaging.
Stephanie, we have less than a minute left. I'm just curious as to how would you be choosing news items, if you will, in the coming year to continue this concept at New City?
In terms of what the news gives to us, I don't think this issue is going away. I think the themes from this issue, but I think ultimately we're looking for ways to engage students, to teach them empathy and to teach them to think critically. So I think most current event news give us that opportunity.
Yeah. Well, it's, again, to repeat myself, I think it's terrific that the kids are having this opportunity at age 10 to learn in this particular way, particularly using the devices that they use all day, every day. Including their telephones and their cell phones and their television sets. Thank you so much for being with us. Stephanie Teachout Allen, fifth grade teacher at New City School. Congratulations to you for what you're doing.
Thank you.
And David Cunningham of Washington University, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.